Hey guys, I don't know if you're like me, but I love Count the Dings and everything it has to offer. I just can't find everything I need. You know, I know about Cinephobe, and I know about the mailbag, and I know about Bomb, but that's all we do, right, Amin?
No, we do so much more.
What?
Yeah, absolutely. If you sign up, patreon.com/countthedings, you'll find a plethora of other content, fresh content, extended content, the OG pod overflow, the Cinephobe cold opens that we've taken and made their own thing to live only there, the Rewatchingtons, Bomb in its full and unadulterated cut, early drops of Cinephobe episodes, and so much more.
Said the OG pod. Now, is it new or is it old?
Mace, I'm glad you asked that. It is a new incarnation of the old OG pod.
Oh.
So it's me, Zach, Trey, Waz, Tom.
I love those guys.
Just like we always were, going back to the True Hoop days, we're recreating that magic, recapturing and putting it back out. We're talking hoops, we're talking pop culture, and most importantly, we're talking for 40 minutes for free, but then another specific Patreon exclusive segment for every one of those episodes.
Funny enough about that OG pod, you're getting Tom and Trey on Mondays, you're getting me and Waz, aka Zosny, on Wednesdays. Amin's floating in between.
I'm a floater.
You never know when you're going to get Amin in those, so you got to listen to them all.
And what if I'm not sure what Maze looks like, because I've always thought he's a fat man with a fedora, he's got a weird voice. How can I see for myself what this Maze character actually looks like?
It's crazy you don't know the answer to this because it's the Cinephobe Pod YouTube page.
What?
The CT5s on the Cinephobe Pod YouTube page. You can look at all of us.
You can get all the OG pods on YouTube too, at Count the Dings 1 on YouTube, at Cinephobe Pod on YouTube. Patreon.com/countthedings gets you everything all in one feed. You can link it to your Spotify. And now enjoy the show.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
All right, welcome to the finale recap with the finalists here. This is such a treat. We've got the Top Chef winner, Melissa King, joining us. Also, Stephanie Smar and Brian Voltaggio back from his camping trip. I hear you had a good weekend there.
I did. I had a great weekend.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for joining us. We're really excited. We had an amazing season and we enjoyed watching you guys. And we have so many questions, but we have so little time here. So Kevin, let's just kick things off. Let's start the roll here. Let's go.
There must be this odd thing in your life, because what seems like just happened 2 days to all of us who watch and are fans, it's like this amazing pinnacle of your life. And then it's sort of like, yeah, and we're going to kind of pretend nothing happened for 6-7 months. And then everyone in our world's going to act like congratulations on Thursday night, as if you just won this championship 48 hours ago. Like, is that weird?
Oh, 100% weird. you know, we come off the show working so hard, and then we celebrate that moment together, you know, between me, Brian, Steph, and the cast and producers. But then we go back to our normal life, and it's kind of sad. So it's nice. I mean, I'm grateful that I can, that the secret's out there now, and that I don't have to carry this this thing for so long, because it's been 7 months, I think, since it all happened.
Yeah, I was just gonna ask, what year, what decade ago was the mise en place quickfire?
The year of my birth, 1985. Like, so long ago.
Brad, do you even remember that? The mise en place out on the Griffith?
It's been, yeah, it was back in September. So it was a long time ago. It takes that long to actually put everything together in production. And then, you know, as it all comes together and unfolds, you know, doing this a few times now, you know, back to Melissa's point, no matter what, you know, happens at the end, I mean, you can't share anything, you know, friends, family, everyone's asking what's been going on. So yeah, I mean, after finale is a big, you know, relief that it's done, it's over. Congratulations, Melissa. You know what I mean? And so we all get to, you know, go back to, I mean, not normal lives because life is changing, you know, so rapidly now, but it's good that, you know, it's over. It's sad that it's over though, because now I'm going to miss it, you know, so, but it's great.
We'll go to a couple of questions about the finale itself and the competition. And then want to hear about your lives, which must be really interesting right now. All right, Melissa, I'm yelling at the TV screen when I see you go to the grill, because like grills are fickle. Like you don't know what's going to happen with a grill you've never seen before. And I'm like, don't do the grill. The grill is just, you know, and so I'm having this sort of anxiety for you. And I'm just like, I can't believe she's going to go to a strange grill that she's never seen before and risk like Top Chef mortality. What are you thinking?
I felt, you know, I had to grill that bird. It just, I wanted that smoky flavor. I wanted the char. I know it started raining a little into the cook. I mean, it wasn't raining when we first started, so I had no idea that it was kind of, the embers were going to kind of slow down, but it actually worked to my benefit to be able to just get like a nice render on the skin. Yeah, so I don't regret it.
But you even pivoted from the day before. If Tom isn't cooking the squab for you guys, are you even using the grill, or was it just because, hey, that looked like a good idea and now I'm going to switch up a little bit?
You know, I was initially thinking, I sous vide the bird. And then I was going to just like pan sear it, kind of do it like a more French style and glaze it with the jus. And then, yeah, we had dinner at the house and I saw that Tom was working this beautiful grill outside. And it just clicked, like, hey, let's grill it tomorrow. So I still sous vide it, but I just kind of like flashed it onto the grill to get the smoke on there.
Brian, I was very despondent on your behalf about the no heart and soul thing. And I delivered basically a 5-minute rant on this. And part of it was for shit. But there does seem to be this thing. Like I said, I think on one broadcast, like, you know, Tuscany is kind of an away game for Voltaggio because like Italian cooks are kind of in their own way, just really snotty about their tradition. And they see this guy coming in who, you know, what some people call, you know, molecular gastronomy or just he works with these textures. It's not conventional rustic cooking. And like, I kind of sense they wanted to give you shit about it. Like they kind of wanted to put this modern cook in his place. And I was just like, it's kind of a really terrible thing to say to someone. I was kind of despondent on your behalf.
Yeah. I mean, I'm unsure whether or not it was lost in translation. You know what I mean? You know, because it could have been, to your point, you know, this is not traditional, you know, this is a little bit, you know, not home style cooking. I don't know, whatever way you want to put it. But I also do know that Padma is very, she's fluent in Italian. So I'm sure translated directly, but regardless, you know, I could care less how they feel at this point because my food is full of heart and soul and I don't really need to prove to them anymore. So, you know, what mattered to me was in the last cook that I did at least show that I do have a different side to my food, because I feel like that people categorize all of us chefs a little bit in our styles. You know, I think everybody has their own opinions about, you know, even the judges, you know, I know that Gail said even at one point during the competition that this looks like Brian Voltaggio's food. And so I understand that because they've seen a lot of all of our food, right? But I'm more than just foams and airs and all of that stuff. You know, I can cook lasagna and I did it beautifully.
Yeah. And by the way, I turned to my partner, Eric, who I'm watching with. And I was like, look, if nothing else happens to him, he just fucking nailed that lasagna. He showed them like whatever else happens in this competition. I'm very happy.
That's it.
You want some fucking lasagna? I'll give you some lasagna. Like,
dropped a knife, right? We don't drop knives in Top Chef.
Stephanie, we had Kevin Gillespie on last week, and he said how many times he like was trying to, you're self-deprecating to a hilarious magnitude where he just wanted to shake you and say, you deserve to be here. You're a fucking really good chef. And just, you know, snap out of it. And you were also on like this, one of the last episodes here, you talked about how you were just happy to be in the top 10. You were just so thankful that you got that far. But what was the turning point for you where you said, Stephanie, like, I think I can win this damn thing, or at least I can get to the final.
Yeah. The whole I've gotten the self-deprecating thing my entire life. I don't have the filter that shuts off the way my mind goes. So these are just the thoughts that are making me laugh or like go through all of this. But I was just talking to somebody about it. And I think that there was a moment around the Kaiseki Challenge, maybe Restaurant Wars, where I realized how lucky I was to have the opportunity to be there. And that if I didn't try my hardest, I would miss out on future chances, like to go to Italy, even to be in the next challenge. So I started, gave myself a kick in the ass and was like, get it together. Like, I've been cooking since I was 14, 15 years old in restaurants. Like, I can do this. And then all of a sudden I stopped being so hard on myself and I just started having fun. And I also, as the numbers went down, got closer with the other chefs. And that friendship that we all forged made me happy, which then made the food taste better.
Quick question.
Don't cry, Brian. I know that was an emotional one.
Just in our final kind of like first game analysis, would you anything different about the milk braised veal? And this is our last like sort of gamesmanship.
Yeah. I wouldn't do it. I wouldn't have done it. I think maybe I would have made the milk sauce and I would have done a preparation of the veal differently. Once the dish got away from me, it sprinted out of Italy. It went to Russia really fast. So I would probably just have done a few more testers with Italian veal just to know sort of what that fat content was and what it would be like when it was braised.
Hey, Melissa, Stephanie drafted Brian Malarkey, I think with the first pick of that finale, where she drew the knife and she was able to pick Brian Malarkey. And sometimes when you got the number one pick, you didn't even want to pick people. You were just like, hey, whoever wants to go, like, go do it. Because I don't really care. I don't want to pick, you know, jobs for people. Are advantages on Top Chef overrated?
I mean, a little bit, I guess. At least for me, just because I felt, you know, everyone here is great. Everyone here can do the sous chef role. So I don't really need that advantage, or I don't need whatever it is that they're giving. So yeah, for me, it felt a little bit underrated.
Yeah, Brian, you didn't get a quick fire. I don't know if you knew that. You didn't win quick fires this season. I don't know if that was a talking point.
No, not at all. It hasn't been for three seasons. You know what I mean? I did kick Kevin's ass in Last Chance Kitchen, and that to me is considered a quick fire.
That was absolutely one.
Yes. Right? Yes, you did. And so to you, you got in the finale in all those seasons and you didn't have to win quick fires. Stephanie, when you picked Malarkey, some of us at home were like, did she just pick Brian Malarkey with the number one pick? And then it turned out to be I thought he was like the best sous chef ever from watching the TV.
He was
right.
Amazing. Brian and I have a very close friendship. Like, he's my pal. And I think that choosing him was like, I don't know, it felt very natural. And I was like, you know what, if anything happens, he's one of the funniest people I know too. Like, at least he can keep us giggling through this whole thing. But he was an incredible sous chef, and he was just like a big, very energetic ball of support. And so, yeah. But I love Kevin and Leanne too. I just was like, I don't know, I love Malarkey.
When you guys watch the show, are you, and whether it was this season or your previous season or seasons, because Malarkey was sort of cast as the heel for us viewers, right, who might not know. Does it ever surprise you the way certain co-chefs are kind of portrayed, or you kind of see the hand at work. Like, oh, that's interesting how they're portraying him. I don't think of that person as that arrogant, or I don't think of that person as that obnoxious.
Hello, listener. I'm sure you don't need me to tell you that we at Cinephobe love our pets. Zach and Boogie are inseparable. I've got two cats and a dog, and Amin is giving his best ass-on performance to convince dog owners that he loves their pet.
Hey, little, hey, boy, how you doing? And Noodle's just like, ah, whatever.
Which is why today's episode is sponsored by the ASPCA Pet Health Insurance Program. For many pet parents, summer is all about making travel plans like adventuring through the national parks, visiting pet-friendly beaches, or road tripping across the country. Wherever your journeys take you and your furry friend, you can help protect them along the way with a plan from ASPCA Pet Health Insurance. The ASPCA Pet Health Insurance Program offers customizable accident and illness plans, making it easier for pet parents like you to help your pet get the care they may need. The ASPCA Pet Health Insurance Program has been around for over 18 years, and they've helped more than 600,000 pets during that time. They allow you to customize your plan, helping ensure that your pet's plan is as unique as they are, because vet bills can really add up, especially when you're least expecting it. It's simple. Use their app to submit a claim, and you'll receive reimbursement for eligible vet bills directly into your bank account. To explore coverage, visit aspcapetinsurance.com/dings, D-I-N-G-S. That's aspcapetinsurance.com/dings. Again, that's aspcapetinsurance.com/dings. This is a paid advertisement. Insurance is underwritten by either Independence American Insurance Company or United States Fire Insurance Company and produced by PTZ Insurance Agency Limited. The ASPCA is not an insurer and is not engaged in the business of insurance. Hello, listener. Guess who's back? It's me, Anthony Mays, your favorite butcher-turned-podcast producer, and I'm here to talk to you about ButcherBox. ButcherBox is the most convenient way to get high-quality meat and seafood that you can trust delivered straight to your doorstep. Free shipping, vacuum sealed packaging. It's ready to go right then. It's ready to pop in the freezer. You get exclusive member deals and a variety of high quality cuts at an amazing value. Going to the grocery store can be a huge pain. You're usually in a rush at an inconvenient time. You're waiting in line at the meat counter. You're taking a number. Maybe this place doesn't have a number. You're jostling with fellow customers. You're trying to get that ribeye that you want or that nice piece of salmon. Maybe the butcher that you're dealing with has a bad attitude or something. I don't know. That was never me, I promise. But maybe it happens. ButcherBox takes all of that out of the picture. You are always prepared with meat and seafood in the freezer, and you're not going to find quality for this price anywhere else other than ButcherBox. So sign up at butcherbox.com/dings, D-I-N-G-S, and get our special deal. ButcherBox is offering our listeners a free for a year offer plus an additional $20 off. You can choose salmon, chicken breasts, or steak tips free in every order for a year. Sign up today at butcherbox.com/dings and use code DINGS, D-I-N-G-S, to choose your free for a year offer plus get $20 off your first order.
I mean, I think everything you see is very true to our personalities. You may see parts that are missing. Like for instance, I think Malarkey, he got a lot of heat from what I saw on Twitter, just from people. And I was like, he's such a sweet human. Like, why are people hating on him? And it's because we know the other side to him. You know, we see that really sweet, positive guy.
Getting up at 4 a.m. to go work out before the show's
energetic. Yeah, like, don't get me wrong. He's very much, you know, what you see. He loves to, like, he can sell anything, you know, and he makes us laugh. He loves to talk, you know, so all of those are very true to who he is. But sometimes I watch and I do wish there was more shown of the other sides that we see in our home together.
For each of you, best thing you tasted this season that wasn't yours?
Steph's pastas. I like, I was obsessed with all of your pastas. She would like feed me little pieces of tortellini like throughout the challenge. I think like the Michaels episode, her pasta was fantastic. And then your ragu for the prosciutto ragu. I was dead.
Bless your soul. Oh, stop it. That makes my day. The best thing that I didn't taste a lot of other people's foods. Like, all. I have to say the best thing that I tasted was that soup that Padma made.
Oh, that was
it was at on the it was so good. Nice. And now I put coriander seeds in my soups.
Yeah.
It was really good. Like, it was like really good.
Like,
but that was
kale bean soup. It was fantastic.
Brian?
All the other times when I had the opportunity to taste other people's food, I was going to throw up. And I was like, I can't taste your fancy food. I got to go.
I've always personally wanted to go to Italy and harvest truffles. And so no matter what, hands down for me, harvesting white truffles and then eating those for the first time straight out of the earth was for me by far a culinary dream come true. So, but everything else, I mean, across the board, I mean, this season, when I did get to try food, you know, because obviously there's a lot going on in the challenges, it's not like previous seasons where you're like, oh yeah, that was a nice try. You know what I mean? Hands down, the best food that I've had throughout the competition. It was always a delight to try the other chef's food and to try to, you know, and to see more about who they are, you know, through their plate. And so this was a very valuable season for me, you know, as a cook and a chef, for sure.
All right. I got to ask, because we might end this conversation and it's going to keep me up at night and I'm going to be so regretful that I didn't ask you. So I'm going to ask it here now. Stephanie, you posted the end of the road video on from Boys to Men, a classic. Mm-hmm. How did it come to be? And how did you pick out which singer would be singing what verse? And how did you get where did this happen? Who came up with the idea? I want the full story on the end of the road video.
It's one of the funniest things I've ever seen in my entire life. So we had the Wranglers, and they would be like, when we weren't shooting things, they would be doing everything in their power to keep us amused and not going crazy. So Desi, who was sort of the lead, she makes music videos every show she's on. She does Master Chef. She does all these other fancy things. So she's like, we're going to make a music video. And I was like, give me a pair of sunglasses, a bathrobe, and that hat, and I'm going to do it. I think first we saw Brian's natural musical ability and dance moves. And we were like, well, he needs to have his own solo role. And I feel most comfortable in the safety of a bathtub drinking champagne. So that came.
Yes.
And then, you know, that was Brian pouring that right into that umbrella. I drank the rest of the bottle shortly after.
My sommelier skills, like, you know, pouring table side.
And then candles on in my leather jacket and decided to take room service and just start, you know, tearing it up on the bed.
So we just like really lived in that moment and had no clue how funny it would be. We didn't have anything to do with editing or anything, but Desi crushed it.
We also, I don't think we're expecting to release it. We had just made it for fun. Like,
oh, no, that was going throughout the world. No, for sure. Amy, that was gold.
There isn't a production in the world that is not going to disseminate as much digital content as they can get.
Yeah. We actually have another single, too. Yeah,
we do.
Haven't that one yet.
Can you reveal it here? Is this breaking news?
What is the song? I Will Survive.
Yes.
Lori Gaynor.
With Princess Mar and the Kings. That's the name of it.
Yep.
We had a few other members, you know, but they kind of fell off.
Well, how much champagne was there?
Champagne. I think I was still drinking.
Cameo in the next video.
She loves it.
All right. So how is this competition different if Chef Gregory's back doesn't go out?
Mm.
Ooh.
Ooh. Oh, I don't know.
One, you know, it really hurt him in that challenge, in the truffle challenge for sure. But, you know, I think that if his dish would have been slightly altered, if you would have, you know, treated the truffle a little bit differently, because I tried that ragu and it was really delicious. I mean, Gregory's food all season was phenomenal. And I think that just, regardless of that, it was the use of the truffle that got him in trouble in that challenge. But, you know, then compounded with the fact that he had the back issue, like, had he been able to carry through in that challenge and get to the other side, he would have been a force to been reckoned with, just like always. I mean, because he's really talented. But then also, he would have been one of the sous chef choices too. And not sure that would have changed anything, because going back to Melissa's point, I felt the same way. Any one of the three people at that point in the competition, they're all solid cooks. You know what I mean? I would have taken anyone, you know, to be, mm-hmm. you know, with me and my cook. And so, it's hard to say, you know what I mean? It's hard to say what would have changed, but, you know, it's unfortunate that he had that issue, because we felt for him, that was on our minds the entire time that we're cooking, shopping, is like, what's going on with Gregory too? You know, because we want him to be comfortable, because he was in a, you know, they got him quickly. They got him medical care and all of that stuff, but it was just difficult to see.
Hey, Stephanie, what is the life of a private chef like? Are you like, is it like eccentric rich people? Or are you like, my partner,
legit
Eric,
question.
Who has the biggest crush on you? Like this entire house became like Team Stephanie. It was like going into like a Green Bay Packers bar. It's like insane. And he's like, ask her what that's like. What is that like?
It is, you know, I eat caviar every day with gold leaf. No. You know, you actually become one of the things that I love about, being a private chef is that I get to cook for people and kind of look them in the eye every night that I serve them food and whatnot. And that was something that was really important. But it's a lot of versatility. It's enough organization to keep me in line, but not too much so I feel stifled. And it's basically like, you know, I'm like an aunt to six or seven families now. I travel with them. I get to do all these things. I go to the kids' graduations. It's definitely more of a lifestyle than a career, it feels like. So it's pretty dope. Like, I don't think I'll ever do anything else as much as I do being a private chef. And I've tried it all.
So Melissa, so you have this, cash infusion now. Do you know what you're going to do with it? Are you kind of waiting to see the sort of the virus? I mean, do you have a specific, like, I kept thinking, oh, she's got to do the Chinese Italian thing. And I was like, maybe she doesn't have to do that. Do you have plans for this money?
I mean, it's evolved since,
she's giving it all to Stephanie and Brian is what she's doing.
I take donations. Venmo.
I think initially I wanted to, like, you know, treat my family on a Italian getaway, or, you know, take them on a vacation, and then maybe open a restaurant and do the Chinese Italian thing. And then COVID happened, and it really showed me how vulnerable our industry is. And so I've sort of, you know, and it's also inspired a lot of other things, like the sauce project that you were talking about, where I just started small batching these sauces and launching them on my site.
There is an order of XO in my life coming up. It is.
Oh, yes.
I'm very excited for this.
So, you know, I started thinking there's something bigger here, and I can maybe, you know, invest that money into a sauce line and really get it on a larger scale. So that I can get it to everyone. Cause my goal at the end of the day is always, you know, how can I bring my food to people, and whether it's through a restaurant or through a cookbook. So you know, it's certainly reinvesting it into myself and the projects that I'm working on.
Hey Brian, did you, coming into this season, did you think I got to work on my quick fires, or are you just like Shaq where you're like, yeah, screw it, I'm not good at free throws, I can still dominate an NBA game?
You know, personally, I just wanted to win one, at least just one, you know, so I could just X that off. But, you know, I didn't, so be it, it doesn't matter. You know, but it was just, it was always frustrating, you know, that I put up good food, you know, but then sometimes I didn't conform to the challenge. You know, let's take fried rice, for example. I made a really amazing fried rice, a take on it. And it had fried rice on top, you know, but whatever. I'm going to sit here and argue all day long.
But my favorite was the flour one.
What's that? I'm sorry?
My favorite was the flour one.
Yes. We need a comment that, you know, Pablo wants to bathe in your sauce, and then you don't win the challenge.
And then she goes, where's the flour? You
know, it's like, come on.
It was a beautiful piece of salmon, right? It was salmon.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, but to your point, yes. I mean, quick fires get you some advantages here and there, but for the most part, you know, it's all about eliminations.
a question I always like to ask. It kind of came out of Brooke's admission at Michael's that there was just like one disastrous night on Valentine's Day. So I always like to ask chefs, like, biggest kitchen disaster of your career.
Well, I can go first on that.
Okay.
So Thanksgiving, and this is the deciding point in my career, actually, whether I was going to continue to cook or not. And this was the eve of Thanksgiving. I was, I think, maybe 15, 16 years old. I was in charge of loading the turkeys, which, don't get me wrong, early in my career, this is like a Holiday Inn, so we're loading frozen turkeys into like this slow roaster overnight. So they're going to thaw, then cook. So it was this whole process, and it actually works. It's called an Alto Sham. And what happened was, I didn't set the cook or the temperature or one of the things properly. And so when the next morning at 5 a.m. we went in to get ready for 500 guests, all of the turkeys were rotten.
Oh.
How do you get turkeys on Thanksgiving morning to replace that? The chefs were calling like all of these other like vendors, and people had to go in Thanksgiving morning and ruin their day to get us turkeys. And I walked in at 8 o'clock, and they all just looked at me like, and somehow I survived that and continued to cook. And it was like, that was the make or break for me. Like I almost quit. I was gonna be done. Or fired. You know what I mean?
So, yeah, how did you just not abandon the whole cooking thing after that?
That's what I mean. You know, but somehow I was given a second chance. And so I, you know, pursued this career, but I'll never forget that, you know, I'll never forget ruining Thanksgiving morning.
So funny. My turn,
Melissa. You probably do. You have one, or you're just like, I don't screw up. You just saw me. I just won.
Yeah, I don't fail.
About what mine is, but mine was more of an injury. I like had a bad injury when I was. It's my first time at the Getty my first job. I was a very young cook, and I was searing off short ribs, and I put too much oil in the pan, and I picked up these big.
Oh my dog.
Short ribs. What's up, dog?
And they flipped right in, and this wave of oil just coated my hand of hot oil, and just completely, my hand was a big bubble, basically the top and the bottom of my arm. And that, you know, I was like 17, and I was very, you know, like excited to be in the kitchen. And then this happened, and I was out of work for a few months because of my hand, but yeah, I kept trucking forward after that. But it was a very exciting moment of my life to see what it was like in the kitchen. Yeah, that was about it.
That sounds awful.
It was pretty terrible.
Going third, they're all flooding back to me rather quickly. It's like, which goodie do we choose? So I used to work at this place, Number 9 Park, and we did holiday lunch every year from like December 1st to the 25th, and it was awful. I don't like expoing, so it was already a disaster, but I would go in at like 7 o'clock in the morning and start all of the prep for the day. So my chef, Patrick, was really about the texture of the beans for the cassoulet. Like, they couldn't be overcooked. You couldn't salt them while they were cooking. They had to have this perfect thing to them. We're in the middle of service. I'm expoing, so hell's breaking loose around me. And one of the servers comes back in, and he's like, this lady said the beans are undercooked. I shit you not. I was like, I wonder how I could just crawl out of here right now. He throws the pot of beans. He starts swearing at me. Now he's making bean puree in the pot. And I'm just standing there, and I've got it's like 11:45. I got to expo till 3. And I was just like, well, this was it. It was beans. It was so bad. And he doesn't remember this at all. We're still good friends. But he threw those beans, molten lava, against the wall. And I was like, sorry, dude.
I've never been into cassoulet.
Yeah, right.
Yeah,
it seems overrated. I don't like totally stock anyways.
Rustic, like 17th century France.
Let's go back to the last judge's table. Are you leaning in your head one way or another who's going to win this thing? Be honest. When you were going in there the last time you were in front of Padma and Tom and Gail, where were your heads at?
For me, I honestly just felt proud to be there, you know, with these two. I think, again, what Brian was saying earlier is like everyone was making amazing food, especially towards the last like half of the show. There were really very little mistakes, and the judges have a hard job, you know, to have to really pinpoint down and critique us on just tiny hairs and fractions of things that we did wrong. So I knew that all three of us felt very proud of what we created that day. And you can see it in our confidence when we came off of the cook, you know, and I was talking to Brian and Steph about how they did. So I honestly was kind of like, you know, I don't, whatever direction this goes, like I just love you guys and I'm proud of us. And, you know, I think it really did feel like we were all winners in that moment. And we kind of joked, like, can we just all like split this? If like whoever wins, like, let's just split it amongst each other. Like, is that allowed? Cause it just, yeah, I just felt so proud of all of us.
If hindsight was 2020, I would have gotten an autograph signature from both of you for that split.
The Venmo is still open.
It is. That never shuts down. No, I'm just kidding, Melissa. I think that when I got up there, I'd have cried the entire day. So I was just like, whatever happened was so exciting. And when Melissa won, I was just as excited for her as I would have been for Brian or myself. You know what I mean? Like, I think that we all, it was still one of the coolest feelings because as the three of us, we made it to the end and we did it. So it was super exciting. And then her mom, when she yelped, when Mama Alice yelped,
That was your mom?
The cutest thing. That was Melissa's mom. That was the cutest thing I've ever seen in my entire life.
I thought it was a magical elf, honestly.
She might as well be.
I mean, she's like 5'1". She's close.
Yeah.
Like, in the previews, it would come out right before the magical elves logo would pop up on the screen. And so I just thought it was like a magical elf sound. That was your mom. That's amazing. That was
my mom.
So sweet.
She's got a heart of gold. So happy for all of us.
Yeah.
Sorry, I talked to Melissa about it. Voltaggio, Stephanie, like, what's next for you? Especially when all this terrible thing that's decimating the industry, even when it clears.
Yeah, for me right now, we're in the middle of starting to make plans for reopening. First concept is going to be coming in the next couple of weeks. It's with one of our partners. Michael and I have a partnership with a hotel casino that we're about ready to reopen. And we have one of our concepts inside. And so we're just taking it concept by concept, you know, to reopen them. Because it's just like you're opening a restaurant all over again, because it's not only are we recreating new food and bringing back the team, but we're also having to be very cautious and train and make sure that the entire team is up to speed on, you know, all the processes for COVID. And so it's a learning experience. It's one that I'm embracing and realize that and excited for, you know, because it's a new time and I just can't wait to cook for guests again. So that's my focus right now, because it's going to be a lot of work and it's in my immediate future right now.
What if I called you up and I'm the producer for Top Chef and said, hey, we want to go round 4?
I've already answered that question, man.
If you go up against Michael, I'll be your Sue.
That's a different story. Honestly, that's kind of like, you know, that might be.
But the only thing that we can get you back is if it was Michael versus Brian.
Just head to head in the ring. No, it's, you know, I've had my time. It's been a blast. You know, honestly, you know, it was an amazing experience. I got to do some incredible things. I'm so glad I got to go back and do it, you know, this third time, especially, you know, under circumstance of going over to Italy and just all of the experiences we had. And to, you know, I knew every single person, you know, that was in the house, but never got, you know, or knew of, but got to meet all of these incredible chefs again and really got to know them. And so I love it. I mean, it's like a mini summer camp for all of us. We just get to go back and just cook and just forget about everything in the world and just do that. And so I'll always remember it. I'll always, you know, never regret the experience, but I won't do it again. That's my final answer.
Two things I want to ask real quick. We're under the clock here. Stephanie, can we bring you on for NBA podcast just to get your one-liners? Just, we need your commentary.
I'll just 100%. I'll just shoot them out.
I'll answer for
anything you want.
All right, we got it in right. It's on the record, Kevin. Stephanie can be, you know, hired to just be an NBA commentator because her commentary is amazing. Done. Awesome. Melissa, Melissa, Kevin has a dream that Top Chef winners, there's a Top Chef season of Top Chef winners. Would you be in for that?
Yes.
Yes. Yeah. I would go back again. Why not?
This is my season for like season 20. I just want like 19 winners
together. Oh my God. Like,
this is my dream. The Battle of Champions or something. I don't know.
You guys, thank you so much for coming.
Thank you. This was super fun.
Thank you for entertaining us, and thank you for making time for us. And best of luck on everything.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Stephanie, I'm going to hold you to it.
Bye, everybody. Yeah, please do.
All right. Kevin, take us out.
I don't know how to hang up, so now we're just together.
For our finalist for Tom Haberstroh, this is Kevin Arnovitz, and this is Pack Your Knives.